Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today as we begin talking about the oldest fish in the world, the sturgeon. We're going to be talking with Kathleen Schmidt-Klein and Ronald Brook, who are two of the three authors of People of the Sturgeon, Wisconsin's Love Affair with an Ancient Fish, which is just published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. You can find out more about the book at wisconsinhistory.org. Kathleen is a science writer at the University of Wisconsin Sea Grant Institute, which supports research, education, and outreach dedicated to the stewardship and sustainable use of the nation's Great Lakes and ocean resources. And Kathleen, it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's great to be here, Jim. Thanks.
You have been busy with another project. Just a month ago, you had a baby boy.
Yes, I did. Oscar Lewis Klein. He's just almost about 5 weeks old now, so he's at home with his dad.
And we are also talking with Ronald Brook, who is National Resources Region Team Supervisor for the Wisconsin DNR, which is based in Oshkosh. He has been the lead sturgeon biologist for the Winnebago system since 1990, holds a doctorate in biology from the UW-Milwaukee, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today, Ron.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. And, of course, the third author is Fred Binkowski, a senior scientist at the University of Wisconsin Great Lakes Water Institute and the Aquaculture Advisory Services Specialist with the UW Sea Grant Institute. So it's a pleasure to have the two of you for this wonderful book, People of the Sturgeon. It is a heavy book. You could do exercises with that. It's got to be 4 pounds of book, which is fitting for a fish that can grow to 300 pounds or more.
Oh, definitely.
So, first of all, Kathleen, let me ask you about your experience that you recall first about the sturgeon.
Well, I was brought on to this project by Ron and by Fred. The project was Ron's idea. He can tell you a little bit about it, but it was Ron's idea, and they were looking for another person to kind of help with the writing, and I jumped at the chance. My grandfather actually was a commercial fisherman on the Mississippi River, so I've always enjoyed hearing lots of fish stories. And when I heard about this fish, it seemed like the biggest story of all, so I jumped on it. And I'm very thankful to Ron and Fred for letting me be a part of it.
Ron, it's pretty much been sturgeon all the way through your career, has it not?
Pretty much, actually, through most of my life, because I was exposed to sturgeon up in northern Wisconsin when I was just a kid on the Flambeau River. My dad used to take myself and my brothers down there fishing all the time, and it has a sturgeon population even to this day that's actually has a fishery. And we used to see these fish and run into them time to time, and it just always amazed me. And I never in my wildest dreams thought that I'd be working with them for most of my career, but I've had the opportunity. I've been with the DNR for 34 years now, and I've had the opportunity throughout most of my career to work with these fish and then direct responsibility for the last 20 years. So it's been a real blessing, and it's been a real fortunate thing for me in my life. I really enjoy working with this animal.
Well, let me ask you about its history. It goes all the way back to prehistoric days?
Yes, actually, the fossil record goes back for about 150 million years. Some say even over 200 million years. So quite a long time, not near as long as sharks, you know, less than half as long as sharks go back in the fossil record, but for a long time, and as such, they are considered prehistoric, and I think that's one of the things that makes them intriguing and unique is because they were here when the dinosaurs were here, and they're still here, and the dinosaurs aren't.
Mm-hmm. One of the people who worked on this book is no longer with us. The photographer, whose pictures are featured in the book, Bob Rashid, died last year at the age of 59 as right. The book was coming together. Kathleen, talk about someone who is also a neighbor of yours.
Yes, actually, Bob lived two doors away from me, and his wife, Holly, is still a neighbor of mine. Bob came to the project. He had actually already experienced a bit of the sturgeon spearing culture. He worked on a previous book called Gone Fishing, which was entirely his project. He wrote it and did the photography, did the photography for it as well. And he wound up on frozen Lake Winnebago one winter and met the Schneider family, who lived just north of Fond du Lac on the east side of Lake Winnebago. And they kind of just took him in. He became kind of part of their family, and they took him out into into their various sturgeon spearing shanties. He attended their post sturgeon spearing parties and really learned a lot about the spearing culture itself. And so there are some photographs of the Schneiders in his previous book. And so when he heard about this project, he was immediately intrigued and was very excited to be part of the project. And he was a joy to have working on the project. We spent a lot of time up on the Wolf River and on the Menominee Reservation and out on Lake Winnebago when it was frozen. And Bob really embraced the project.
Mm-hmm. And it's dedicated to him, is it not?
Yes.
Ron, talk about your impressions of working with Bob Rashid.
Well, Bob was just an absolute joy to work with. I mean, the total professional and extremely good at what he does. And I like to tell people that the photographs in this book are, you know, the highest quality, you know, the National Geographic level quality, and they truly are because of the work that Bob did. And it was a real tragedy to lose him right at the end of this project. As a matter of fact, I think he was getting ready to go on his last shoot for us for the book when he passed away. So that was a real tragedy, but we're very happy that we can dedicate the work to him. And his you know, when I look at what really brought this thing together, you know, we were extremely blessed to have Kathy in our group working with us, and because she's so talented. And I still, every time I read this book, I still get the goosebumps. And as a matter of fact, I remember that the first night that Kathy had some of the introductory chapters written, and she sent them to me for editing, and I read them, and I was just totally captivated by reading these things. And I'm getting goosebumps right now just even thinking about it. And I think it was about 11 o'clock at night, and I called her up. I was so excited. I called her up. I had to tell her that it was just such wonderful prose and how she put this information together. And the same thing goes for Bob with the photographs that he did. They just bring this whole thing alive along with the prose. And so we've got nothing but just tremendous comments and reviews from people up here that have already purchased the book.
If you'd like to join in the conversation with Kathy Klein and Ronald Brook, all you have to do is give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. If you have questions or would like to share your experiences of spearing or of the sturgeon, then give us a call at 800-642-1234. Many people probably think the only place that sturgeon are found is in Lake Winnebago, but that obviously is not the case.
No, that, as a matter of fact, for that particular species, lake sturgeon, Wisconsin is right directly in the center of the lake sturgeon range in North America. They range all the way from actually down to Tennessee, northern Alabama, all the way up to Hudson Bay. But in North America, there are seven different species of sturgeon, and lake sturgeon is one of three species that is entirely freshwater. And in Wisconsin, we have two species, the lake sturgeon and the shovelnose sturgeon, and the shovelnose is over in the Mississippi in the lower Chippewa, lower Wisconsin River. But they're much smaller than the lake sturgeon, and the lake sturgeon is really king in Wisconsin. And Wisconsin actually has the best remaining lake sturgeon populations in North America because of our long-standing management program. We've been ahead of a very proactive management program for over 100 years now.
Well, let's talk about what happened when the sturgeon were over-harvested and then the habitat loss took a heavy toll. They were on the brink of extinction, I'm told. Would you share that, Ron?
Yes. Back in the late 1800s, the lake sturgeon was extremely abundant, or in the mid-1800s, it was extremely abundant in the Great Lakes and throughout its range. And initially, the commercial fisheries that developed once the Europeans settled here despised the lake sturgeon because they were large, they ruined their equipment, and they would literally kill them and whenever they had the opportunity just to get rid of them. And then some Germans came over here and taught people how to process the flesh by smoking it and also process the caviar. And the caviar is an extremely high-quality caviar, very similar to the caviar of Russian sturgeon, the beluga sturgeon, high-quality, very good taste. And the as a result of that marketing, the fishery just expanded overnight exponentially. And within 30 years, the sturgeon populations in the Great Lakes were almost brought to the brink of extinction. And to this day, 100 years, more than 100 years later, there's just beginning now to show some signs of very early recovery in the Great Lakes stocks.
We'll talk more about that in just a moment. Let me invite people to join in 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Kathy Klein and Ron Brook, two of the three authors of People of the Sturgeon, Wisconsin's Love Affair with an Ancient Fish, published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Let's give Gene and Oshkosh a chance to get in here. Hi, Gene.
Lady and gentlemen, yes, I may be assassinated for these comments, but I live on Lake Winnebago and have done so for almost 40 years. We respect the sturgeon. I've seen them broach out of the water. We go to Shiocton and see them, so I have a great deal of affinity for the fish. What really has bothered me ever since we've moved to Winnebago is the harvesting process. I see no reason why we don't harvest the fish hook and line as they do in the Snake and some of the other tributaries of the Columbia River. It is simply, I've seen this happen. When you're in these sheds out on the ice, and you're drinking some brandy, and you throw a spear, it's so easy to kill, if you will, the wrong gender or the wrong size, and all you have to do is just take it off the spear and just slide it back under the ice, and no one, including the DNR, is ever going to know the difference. And therefore, I really believe we are over-harvesting our very, very valuable resource, and I see no reason to be spearing fish. We gave it up with the salmon on Lake Michigan. We should give it up here with the sturgeon. Thank you.
Ron, you want to pick that up?
Sure, sure. Actually, you're absolutely right. Years ago, there was a problem because in 1974, we increased the minimum size limit to 45 inches. And at that time, there were some informal surveys done through Sturgeon for Tomorrow, which found that there was a fairly high harvest rate to fish less than 45 inches or spearing rate, and those fish would get kicked off, and a lot of those fish probably would die. But since then, we've lowered the size limit to 36 inches, and there are very few fish in Lake Winnebago that are less than 36 inches just because of the way the migration patterns are and the habitat use patterns are in the systems. Most of the juvenile fish live up in the rivers and the upriver lakes, and they don't really fully recruit to Lake Winnebago. Most of them don't recruit to Lake Winnebago until they're over to the 36 inches or larger. So since we lowered the size limit, the spearing of sublegal fish has basically, for all practical purposes, been eliminated, and we've eliminated any incidental mortality as a result of that.
Gene, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate hearing from you. As we talk with Kathy Klein and Ronald Brook, two of the three authors of People of the Sturgeon, Wisconsin's Love Affair with an Ancient Fish. And we'll be back in just a moment to take more of your calls on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about the oldest fish in the world, the sturgeon. And I was just looking at the contents of your book, Kathy, and you have some interesting title chapters in there. Why don't we go through that so that people have an opportunity to understand just what's involved in the book itself?
Well, one of the reasons this book was so interesting to work on, I'm a science writer, so of course it was interesting to write about the biology of sturgeon and learn about, you know, all of the intricacies of what makes them a special fish. But also the culture surrounding this fish really, I think, made this story just a wonderful one to work on. We just had a question about spearing. It was interesting to learn that the spearing culture has been around in Wisconsin well before Europeans settled. Most of the Great Lakes Indians have been spearing sturgeon, long before anybody any of the Europeans started. And it was interesting to learn about the history, about how that spearing tradition has kept going around Lake Winnebago and is still such an important part of the culture today. There are families who have been spearing sturgeon for 4 or 5 generations around Lake Winnebago. And we also have a chapter on the Menominee Indians who have been spearing sturgeon for as long as they've been in the Wisconsin area.
You also have a chapter on the art of sturgeon spearing, on sturgeon for tomorrow. Sturgeon for tomorrow, let's talk about that as a support group.
Sure. Ron might be the best person to comment.
Right, Ron.
Ron's been working with Sturgeon for Tomorrow for quite a long time.
Yeah, Sturgeon for Tomorrow is a great organization. It's the largest sturgeon citizens advocacy group in the world, and it was founded right here in Wisconsin. And there's 5 chapters now around Lake Winnebago, but it was actually started in 1977. And one of the things that we were able to piece together in the production of the book was really what brought them into existence was at a time when the sturgeon stock was just past its lowest point on the Lake Winnebago system as a result of high harvest in the 1950s and poaching that occurred in the 30s, 40s, and 50s that resulted in the lowest adult stock densities by the late 1960s. And they had some very poor water quality also in the late 60s and early 70s, which really hampered the spearing efficiency. And a combination of those two things brought people together to form Sturgeon for Tomorrow. And so it's interesting how they came into being, but they initially wanted to stock fish to solve the problem. And our biologists at the time thought, well, we really have enough fish out there to grow this population. So the two groups worked together to basically crack the code on how you do artificial reproduction with sturgeon. And that had never been done before outside of Russia. And Russia wasn't telling us their secrets at the time. And so they were able to work with the DNR and with other people to come up with the techniques and develop the techniques to do this. And since then have supported DNR and other research groups up to the tune of almost $750,000 with money that they've raised to their banquets. So it's a great organization, and they're very, very dedicated to sturgeon.
If you'd like to join the conversation about this oldest fish in the world, the sturgeon, our number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Nancy is next in Grafton. And Nancy, what's on your mind today?
Okay, this is what's happening in our community. The Milwaukee River runs through our village, and there's a dam there. Well, the dam either has to be replaced or fixed all up with ladders for the fish, gates for the water to be opened up, or the DNR, which inspects this, I believe, every 4 years at a cost of I don't know how many thousand, said they will remove this dam and let the river run free. Well, this controversy about what to do with the dam has caused our community to really, really be divided. And, you know, I just feel let the river run free. You know, there's so much algae back up and all that stuff, but they're complaining, oh, well, our property is going to lose value because we don't have the big dam, all that water there. And we'll have mud pies in front of our house, and on it goes. What is your thinking? You're all professional people. And what is your thinking about removing dams or replacing it, fixing it up, and putting fish ladders and gates and all that stuff?
All right.
I'll listen on the phone.
Well, I can take a shot at that first, Jim.
Sure.
Up until very recently, the generally biologists would advocate removing dams from waters, no matter where they were, to allow free fish passage and passage of other animals up and down the river systems. And generally that does make for a healthier system. On Great Lakes waters, though, there is an issue of aquatic invasive species. And now some of the dams on the river systems, and I know there's dams further downstream on the Milwaukee River system, and I'm not sure whether Grafton would be the dam that could be considered a barrier. But there's also a need to consider if there are dams on Great Lakes rivers, the impact of removing that dam on the movement of aquatic invasive species like zebra mussels or or gobies or other or even pathogens, VHS, for instance, viral hemorrhagic septicemia virus, upstream from those points and further up into the watershed. And so while removing dams is generally a good thing, there is another thing that has to be considered in whenever a dam is being considered for removal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, dams don't have to be removed necessarily to move animals up and downstream. You can put in fish passage devices or whatever, and there's we actually have the on the upper Fox River here on the Winnebago system, a low-head dam that we built a fishway on it, and it's probably the most successful fish passageway for sturgeon in the world. And so there are other techniques short of removing dam for getting animals to be able to move up and down the stream corridor.
Are sturgeon found in the Milwaukee River?
Historically, they were. And there's a effort now to try to restore them. They were extirpated from the Milwaukee River system, and there's an effort going on for about the last 4 or 5 years now with a hatching trailer that's set up, I believe, downstream of Grafton, further down, where we actually take the eggs here on the Wolf River, and they rear the eggs in a trailer that's set up on the riverside with river water flowing through the trailer so that the eggs and the larvae that hatch from those eggs have the greatest probability of imprinting to the Milwaukee River. So 25 to 30 years later, when they come back to spawn, they'll find the Milwaukee River and run up the Milwaukee River to spawn. So there are sturgeon, again, in the Milwaukee River.
Okay. Back to the phone we go to Ron in Toma. Ron, what's on your mind this morning?
Thank you for taking my call. A number of years ago, about 7-8 years ago, my wife and I were canoeing between Oxbow and Park Falls on the Flambeau.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a couple gentlemen in a motorized boat who were fishing. There apparently was a special season in the fall. They had to be like 50 inches and larger. And they actually each had a fish on, and we'd run our canoe into the brush. We were so interested in watching them battle these huge sturgeon. And I guess I wondered if that season was still existed and is it an annual thing? And I guess if there's such a shortage of sturgeon, there must be quite a population in that area.
We still do have an annual hook and line fishery on numerous waters in the state. The Flambeau River is one of them, the Chippewa, the Wisconsin River, and the Menominee River on the Wisconsin-Michigan border. The populations in those waters are still large enough to support the fishery, but we watch it very, very closely. The size limit now is 60 inches. It's a minimum size limit of 60 inches, so that helped reduce the harvest a little bit and keep things in check. But, yeah, it's still out there. It's in the fall. It's usually the month of September, so it'll be opening up here real soon. And we have seen a lot more interest in this fishery over the last 10 years. A lot more people have come into it. So it's something that we have to keep our eye on very closely to make sure that we don't overexploit.
I should add, too, that the research that's been done on the Winnebago population of sturgeon has really benefited sturgeon populations all over the world. The things that Ron, Fred, and other researchers have learned about lake sturgeon in Winnebago, in the Winnebago system, has been used to help other populations recover and just help uncover a lot of the secrets about sturgeon that people have not known in the past. So it's a very important population to research and sturgeon all over the world.
We're talking with Kathy Klein and Ronald Brook, who are two of the three authors of People of the Sturgeon, Wisconsin's Love Affair with an Ancient Fish. It's published by Wisconsin Historical Society Press. You can get more information at wisconsinhistory.org. And I believe that next month is the official launch of the book, is it not, Kathy?
Yes, we're having an event at the Oshkosh Public Museum on September 20th at 4 p.m. And I'm sure lots of Sturgeon for Tomorrow members will be there, and we'll all be celebrating the completion of this project.
Mm-hmm.
And I should add, too, that Sturgeon for Tomorrow members, the organization donated money for this project, $25,000, to help offset the the cost of publication, but they also, volunteers, help to interview people in the community. So we had over 60 oral history interviews done for this project, and they'll all be archived at the Oshkosh Public Museum. And they were very, very important in writing this book. I had some wonderful material to work with.
Mm-hmm. And I know that in the book is an account of one man who believes that sturgeon is the greatest food in the world and can't get enough of it. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes. Actually, I'm not remembering that man's name right now, but he loves to eat sturgeon. And they also had a family recipe that Ron had heard about from other families as well, too, sturgeon head soup.
Oh, yes.
What's a sturgeon head soup consist of besides the head?
Pretty much sturgeon head. There's not a whole lot of meat on a sturgeon head, but inside the sturgeon head, there's a lot of cartilage, so great collagen for making soup stock. And people basically boil a head and then throw in their vegetables or whatever. And the interesting story is that we use a small tag. It's called a pit tag. And it's the same thing that people put in their dogs and cats. That's a permanent tag that they carry around with them. And you activate the tag with a reader, and it sends a number back to the reader, you know, so you can identify that individual fish. And we put that in right behind the head of the sturgeon. And I had a fellow call me up one time and ask me, what do these blankety-blank tags look like? And I told him, and he says, well, I found one in my blankety-blank sturgeon soup, sturgeon head soup.
And I did find the name of that man. It's Bill Gazer, and he was born in Stockbridge in 1922. So that was one of his early memories. He actually believed that his family probably learned it from the Stockbridge Indians living in the area, mm-hmm. that maybe it was a recipe that was passed on.
Mm-hmm. Talk about what it's like to be there in the height of the spearing season in winter, Ron, with thousands of people arriving with trucks or shanties or anything that they can use in that fishing experience.
It is it's absolutely exhilarating experience. The community comes together. It literally just comes alive around the lake, and Kathy can attest to this as well, because she actually has probably been out on the lake more than I have been, because my time is spent mostly on shore, going from one registration station to another to make sure that we have all the equipment and everything is going well with registering fish. But until you experience it, it's actually hard to describe, because the closest thing that people say it even comes close to is the deer hunting experience in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
But it's even more intense and more concentrated. And then you have weather issues that you have to deal with. And in 1995, on opening day, it was 50 below zero with the wind chill. There were still 10,000 people out there, and they registered nearly 1,000 fish that day.
And probably six of them had no shirt on at all.
Well, probably. But, I mean, they're very hardy, and they love this sport. And I've done it a number of times myself. When I'll schedule myself for a day off and go out and sit in a shack, and I've never seen a fish yet. And it's probably the most boring thing you ever wanted to do until you see a fish. And once you see a fish, and then if you spear a fish, you're hooked for life.
Our guests are Kathy Klein and Ronald Brook, who are two of the three authors of People of the Sturgeon. The third author is Fred Binkowski, senior scientist at the UW Great Lakes Water Institute and the Aquaculture Advisory Service Specialist with the UW Sea Grant Institute. Bob Rashid is the photographer who took some marvelous pictures for this book. And then you also were able to get old photographs from the Wisconsin Historical Society.
We had kind of a drive for photos and artifacts that the DNR and Sturgeon for Tomorrow organized. It was a sturgeon history project. So people sent in their old photographs. We had the oral history interviews, and people donated artifacts as well. And again, those will all be part of the Oshkosh Public Museum collection. So we had some wonderful family photos that were sent in and really helped to piece together some of the history that we are trying to put together for this book, too. Mm-hmm. So it was really a community-wide effort.
Yeah, and a really neat thing, too, is we did all these interviews, and, I mean, some people we interviewed for up to 4 hours, and they're all captured on audio tapes. And we only were able to use little snippets of these interviews in the book because there just wasn't enough room to put everything, of course. But those families now have that portion of their loved one's life captured on an audio tape and with a transcript that we're going to be gifting back to those families once we get through some of the other parts of the early phases of marketing the book.
Mm-hmm. There's a picture of you and Fred Binkowski on page 226. There's you are working on a six-month-old sturgeon there.
Oh, yeah. Yep, we've done a lot of work together, Fred and I, over the years in his lab in Milwaukee. And Fred was one of the persons in the late 1970s, in 1979, actually, that worked with Sturgeon for Tomorrow to help crack the code on how to rear sturgeon with artificial propagation. And it's interesting because at the same time, there were researchers, literally the same time, there were researchers working on the Atlantic coast with Atlantic sturgeon, on the West Coast with white sturgeon, and they all came together. They just happened to all be at a meeting together at about that same time, and they found each other. And so Fred is really one of the pioneers in North America for getting this technology developed.
Sounds good. Let's go back to the phones to Josh in Hayward. Hello, Josh.
Hey, guys. Can't wait to get my hands on the book. I had a couple of humorous anecdotes. I've been to Winnebago a couple times spearing. My interest is in carving the decoys. I think I enjoy that more than the sitting there in the dark. But the funny thing an old-timer told me was that spearing sturgeon was like hunting ducks looking up your chimney, and I thought that was... That was pretty funny, but my main story is back in the late 60s, early 70s, we fished on Lake Michigan, and there was a fellow fisherman there one time that was bragging about sneaking up to the Wolf River or someplace like that and, you know, wrestling the spawning fish to shore and, you know, and poaching them, and my dad was always, you know, very much against that. Well, this very same guy was running out. You know, we were fishing maybe 10, 12 miles out Lake Michigan, and this guy was running out to this fishing spot on Lake Michigan, and he struck a floating sturgeon that they later figured out was maybe dying anyways. But he struck the sturgeon, and it was so big that it tore a 100-horse motor off the back of his boat. Same guy bragging about poaching the fish was done in by a sturgeon, and we just always got the biggest kick out of that.
Yeah, payback, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds that way. It's karma.
Yep, that's right, karma.
Josh, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. Many people probably are not aware that while lake sturgeon are known to be bottom feeders, they will leap clear of the water. And that is that something that all sturgeon exhibit, Ron?
I believe most species do exhibit that behavior. And we're not exactly sure why. There have been some papers published on speculation and actually some scientific research as to why they might be doing this. But there's the theories range from trying to shed lamprey off of them to actually communicating with each other. Another theory that I see, that I hold high on the list, is that they may be trying to make a quick air exchange out of their air bladder, because sturgeon's air bladder they're connected to their throat. Whereas other fish, if you try to exchange air through their bladder, they have to do it through their blood. It's a very slow process, and sturgeon can actually burp themselves. Hmm. And so that might be another, it might be a combination of things, but it's very common to see sturgeon jumping out on Lake Winnebago. And then in the spring of the year, prior to spawning, they actually exhibit this behavior right for two or three days before they start spawning. They'll start jumping out of water and porpoising. And it's maybe a communication technique, or also maybe trying to exchange their swim bladder air or whatever, but it's very, very prominent during the spawning time.
We had a caller who was curious about a sturgeon project at Lac des Flambeaux. What can you tell us about that?
Well, Larry Rowanowitz, he is the tribal biologist for Lac des Flambeaux, and I know Larry quite well, and a very good biologist, good person. He's been working with the tribe to reestablish lake sturgeon in the tribal waters in the Lac des Flambeaux Reservation. And basically, the populations up there were also brought to very low levels by harvest and habitat modifications with building of dams on the various river and lake systems. And so Larry is working to stock fish, rear fish and stock fish, to reestablish them for the tribal people.
And actually, Fred, our co-author, has been working with Larry on that. He travels up to the reservation and has helped with sturgeon surgeries up there to implant the radio transmitters that they use to track the sturgeon to see where they're
right.
going. And very interesting project.
There's a picture of lake sturgeon eggs incubating in Fred's lab in a hatching jar.
Right.
That is a phenomenal picture.
Yeah, the eggs are actually quite large. They're about 3 millimeters, a little less than 3 millimeters in diameter. And Fred can do it better than anybody, and he's been doing it for a long time. And we've done, like I say, a lot of different experiments with the eggs, with the larvae, and in the last decade, we've been stocking a number of those fish out in the Winnebago system to look at the behavior of stocked fish and putting, as Kathy mentioned, the sonic and radio transmitters in these young fish and really finding out a lot more about the behavior of wild fish and stocked fish in our system. That's helping the rest of our program in the state.
Mm-hmm. As we wrap up, Kathy, let me get your feelings about this project and what you sort of went in with and what you came away with.
Wow. Well, the culture surrounding this fish is really amazing. It really blew me away. And the more I dug into the history, I spent a lot of time at the Historical Society digging into some old Conservation Department records, you know, from finding out that people were trying to shut down the ice fishing in Wisconsin to just learning about family stories, the decoy carvers, the sturgeon guards who guard the sturgeon up on the Wolf River every spring. It's quite a story. And people really, really have a relationship with this fish. One of Ron's predecessor, Dan Foltz, I was talking to him about, you know, what makes sturgeon special. And he said, you know, he's dealt with fish, all sorts of fish working for the DNR. And really, he said the lake sturgeon is the only fish that he really felt like he had a relationship with, mm-hmm. a close relationship with.
Ron, do you have that same feeling?
Yes, definitely. And my wife would definitely tell you that I have a close relationship with these fish because I often have to abandon her and go in the field for weeks on end to work with them. But it is, I mean, they do mesmerize you. There's something about sturgeon that is unique that you just don't get from other fish, from walleye, northern pike, even muskie. They've been called gentle giants. They're huge fish, and they have such an interesting life history. They can live for over 100 years. And we recently had a dead one on Lake Winnebago that was shot accidentally or hopefully not on purpose with an arrow. And this fish would have been over 200 pounds if it had eggs in it, and it would have been a new record for Lake Winnebago. And the people around the lake they actually mourned this fish. And so it does something to you to really draw you to it. And I'm very happy with how that whole essence has been captured in the book.
Great. Thanks very much to both of you for spending time with us today to talk about People of the Sturgeon, Wisconsin's Love Affair with an Ancient Fish. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
And Ron, thanks to you as well.
Thank you, Jim.
And the third author, Fred Binkowski, photographs by Bob Rashid. The book is published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. More information at wisconsinhistory.org. I'm Jim Packard. Thanks for listening. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer today. If you'd like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store. You'd be asking for program 826F as in Frank. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.